A5, number 5B.
Yes, so further, in order to build the concept of these seven synonymous terms and their ideas, you also see that, for instance, in the compendiums, we give dictionary definitions of most of the important ideas. This all helps in order to get the more exact expression and language which we can use for expressing our ideas. So study also those definitions, because they are sometimes very interesting. They show, so to say, how each idea may link together with other ideas that are under the same roof category of the seven synonymous terms. In a way, one gets acquainted with one's own language, which one uses perhaps too superficially, and language is a wonderful vehicle for communication, and it should be exact as possible. Yes, so in this way, we can now have a list, and now really comes the concept building. And as one takes now that list, you begin to use it perhaps in the following way. You see, the findings just tell you that through analysis of the text, you have arrived at the conclusion that, say, the synonymous term mind is being characterized through your list of terms. Okay, that's that. Now, what have we gained? Not really very much. At least what we have gained is a pure analysis, but what does it mean? And so, where we start now is really the study of the seven synonymous term by building up first within ourselves the concept of each synonymous term. It's actually there where we usually start our synonym classes at home, that we say that we take these ideas, these lists as granted, our findings as granted, and say, now what does it mean? And we begin to think along these concepts. We start out by thinking what do these terms mean? You see, it's now a work that you do, so to say, without the textbook. You have arrived from the textbook at a certain conclusion, giving us the characteristic ideas, and now we have to build up within ourselves the true concept of each synonymous term. And to build up that concept, you can't do by reading them. It must be an activity that goes on in each mind, thinking it out and thinking it out. So that one begins to think out now, why do all these terms that we have on the mind, why do they link together? What have they in common? And so you begin first to remember them, so to say, to ponder them, and to ask questions within you. Ask question, why and what has now creator to do with producer, with maker? And you begin to realize that's practically the same thing, only different terms. And you begin to build up a sense already that gives a tone. As you begin to build up the concept, slowly the tone comes in and says, oh, mind has to do, always to do with that which is creative, producing, making something, springing for something. See, the creative aspect of it. And the moment you have that creative aspect, then something within says, but if it's creative, then certainly it must also have a causative aspect. We can't have a creator without being a cause, for instance. And you begin to think, oh, so mind is not only the creator, but in order to create, you must have a cause. There is no creation going on without the cause. Therefore, mind must also be the cause. If you have cause, you say, well, cause is origin. Origin has to do. It has to do with the source of all being. So you get the sense of cause and origin and the source of all being. Apparently, cause is always at the beginning of something, therefore it must be the first where you begin. You get the sense of first coming in. Can you see all these ideas which you have on the mind? You think about them and see how they link together. How they are not just terms that have no connection whatever among themselves. And this, as one thinks out these things over hours and over days and over months, you begin to get somehow the touch and the tone of what each synonymous term wants to say. And I will do that together tomorrow with the class. You'll take with you the compendium of mind into the class, and then we will go through the compendium of mind, and I will show you how these various terms that seem to have nothing to do with each other, like what should the quality of guiding have to do with cause? See, and yet mind is cause and is guiding. How do they link together? Why are they in the one roof category? Why do they form just one term, mind? This has to be thought out and thought out and thought out. So the synonym study could, once one knows also how we arrived at these results, could start right in by culturing really the findings, culturing our spiritual sense through the exact letter, and begin to feel the touch and the tonality of these seven synonymous terms. Anyway, that's one way of doing it, and would really then put the stress on the spiritual aspect and not so much on the letter aspect of the synonymous term. Now, I don't want to start on the tonality of tonality building, so I just take a few minutes that is left and take up one or the other question that may arise. We are always asked and faced that the Christian Science movement does not accept our teaching. And we have to face that, and face that squarely. They feel that we make things fit, and that our analysis is not right, that our teaching is not right. Now, you can see why they feel that way, and one has some understanding why they feel that way. Because, as I've shown you, textually, they could disprove us. As long as they take only the letter, black on white. If they would know the method, then naturally they could come to the same conclusion. You see, the history is that way back at the beginning of the 1940s, they were attacking John Dawley's teaching through the Sentinel and the Journal, stating that the synonymous terms are freely interchangeable. Then, after a while, they could see that they can't get away with it, because the field was asking their teachers, teach us the synonyms. Tell us about the synonyms. These people are saying they know the synonyms and that the movement doesn't quite know it. Teach them. And so they began to teach in the classes, in the lectures, the synonyms. And it's interesting to see how they did it. And I have to point that out because we have to be aware of what we do and how they look at it. One lecturer giving a lecture on the synonymous term showed the following method of how to study the synonymous term. He stated and explained it rather explicitly and said, look here, God is defined through the seven synonymous terms. Okay. How do you arrive at a better understanding of the seven synonymous term? All right. You make a list. And you write down, always when something comes into your mind, write down to where you want to put that term, under which synonymous term you want to put it. And so in this way you get the whole list of the seven synonymous terms. What would you say about that? So they have the seven synonymous terms and they have a list. Now what would you say? Beg your pardon? You see, that they go out from their own feeling, their own personal sense or humor, or say personal approach, where they put the ideas. If they feel that law has something to do with principle, they put law under principle. If they feel that joy has to do with love, they put it under love. Can you see that this method is not a scientific method? It has nothing to do with that terrific, exact way we try to arrive at our conclusions. So, we have to be careful that when now more and more the movement is saying, we also teach the synonymous term, that we have to ask, yes, that's fine, but tell us the method. The very fact that they teach the synonymous term is nothing extraordinary. The question is, do they know the method? And do they employ and use that method or not? Because that gives the key if they are working scientifically or if they are not working scientifically. And up to now, I have never seen anybody from the movement who has stated the method or stated a scientific method, how to do it. But they all would like to know it. For instance, here is only a few years ago a circular letter from a joint lecture committee in America. It was rather interesting to see that in order to prepare, say, spiritually for the lecture, they gave out a question and answer paper and stated the following. They said, the following questions are to help us unify our concordance research and unify our application of the powerful qualities of God to specific support of the lectures. First, do we see how the infinite power of God is explained through the seven synonymous terms? See how they would like to know it. How they would like to know how to apply those seven synonymous terms for their work and for their activity. But they can't give the answer how. Are we more conscious than ever before of the innumerable qualities of each synonym? See? They are asking really for what we are doing, but they don't give a method how to arrive at it. Even third, what specific qualities of the synonyms for God destroy the false beliefs which might keep our friends from coming to the lectures? See, they begin to see that each synonymous term have a definite counterfeit, and that therefore, as they were working on lectures in that case, and how to work metaphysically, that people are not kept away from lectures, you see, they also went out from the argument, just as Mrs. Eddy in the textbook, she goes out from the subject, from arguments, from the negative, and say, which synonymous term could we apply in order to offset this false concept? But they don't give an answer how. It's all left to the inclination of each student. Whereas we try to state a scientific method independent of the student. And this I would like to state very clearly, because more and more the Christian scientists go around and say, oh, we are also taught the seven synonymous terms. Our last association was all about the seven synonymous terms. Yes? But how? One can talk about them, but how? And so I feel this is very important. Now, I can foresee, really, that the issue is getting bigger and bigger. That we have to stand our ground. I mean, in a way, it's quite interesting to see that Mr. Dawley was excommunicated from the church on the ground of his study of the synonymous terms. It was not a personal issue, it was a really, what I would say, a theological issue. Namely, that he was saying, look here, every one of those seven synonymous terms have characteristics that are different from the others, and because of that difference, and only because of that difference, you can really have order at all. If they are all the same, you cannot build order. Can you see the implication, the very first implication out of many implications that came afterwards? If we have seven things that look exactly alike, can you put them into an order? Can you put seven things that are exactly alike in an order? No. See? Order is only possible when things are different. So how on earth could we have order in the seven synonymous terms if they were the same? Or put it the other way around. If we find out that the seven synonymous terms are different, then they lend themselves for order. A completely new aspect enters in. See, at that very point, we get away from the atomistic concept of the science of being and begin to touch the structural aspect of it. Because structure is nothing else but to see all the interrelationships and all the orders that consist within the whole. Now, if every one of the seven synonymous terms would mean the same and that would be freely interchangeable, there is no possibility to build a science on it. Can you see how fundamental this question was that was asked 40 years ago by John Dawley? There is no science possible where there are no differentiated identities of being. We cannot build a science of music just with one tone, or a science of arithmetic just with one number. You have to have differentiated elements in order to build order, because the moment they are differentiated, you can ask yourself, how are they interconnected? How do they link together? So that, now you see the addition, so that not only the datas are important, but the relationship is important. Why does spirit follow mind? Why comes after spirit soul and not principle? Why comes after principle life and not love? These are questions of greatest importance, because they lead us away from the atomistic concept of having to do with just datas, but bring us into relationship. You see? And the moment we have relationship, we have the synergy principle. The synergy principle is that principle which has broken down a 2,000-year-old false concept in our Western civilization. Namely, up to recently, the old Greek concept was adopted that the whole is as big as the sum of its parts, or the other way around, the whole is not bigger and not smaller than the sum of its parts. That was one of the fundamental scientific statements or theorems that we had to know. Without that, we couldn't pass any examination in the 30s. Today we would fall through if we would state that. Because now we have, science has seen what? Has seen that the whole is much, 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 much bigger than the sum total of its parts. Why? Because the relationship that exists between the parts bring forth order, so that the whole as a whole is a whole structure wherein all the parts are connected in an orderly way, in a systematic, orderly, lawful way, so that the whole is the sum total of the parts plus the relationship that exists between the parts. Now, if we see that, then we begin to see that only on that basis we can analyze the textbook rightly. Up to that point, for instance, we would always read single sentences in the textbook and try to understand what does that sentence mean. And when we understood it, we would go to the next sentence and could understand it somehow. And so we could go from the first sentence to the last sentence in the textbook and somehow understand it. I don't know if you have made that experience yourself, but I felt at one time way back that there was no more many statements in the textbook that I didn't understand. And I think many have that feeling that they understand each sentence by itself. But when they have come to the end of the textbook, they say, I wonder what's all about. I haven't understood a thing, actually. What is it all about? This is typical. This is just the breaking of a completely new paradigm. Namely, that what we should understand is not the single sentence, but that which binds everything together in the textbook. That which is not spelled out in black and white on the paper, but that which is relationship, and the relationship cannot be written. You can only read the datas, the terms, the concepts. We cannot read the relationships. That is something we have to see ourselves. I wonder if you have had that experience, that you have been studying in earlier times the textbook closely, earnestly, feeling, yes, I understand the first sentence, yes, I understand somehow the second sentence until the last sentence, and then finally saying, I wonder what it is all about. This is the general feeling in the movement, that they say, what on earth is it all about, actually? Why do they say that? Because they have somehow investigated the parts, the concepts, but not the relationships. Not the relationships. And only when one sees the relationships from chapter to chapter, from paragraph to paragraph, if one begins to see the structure that is not spelled out in English terms, but which lies there as a spiritual structure, then one begins to understand the textbook completely differently from a higher point. It means so much more. It means 100 times more than before. So, can you see what the issue was? The issue was, yes, let's analyze the synonymous terms. But when we have analyzed it, see what is the relationship of one synonymous term to the next. Relationship, relationship, relationship. This is the most important. So that having our list, I went out from that list, is the beginning of it, the very beginning and not the end of it. Don't think that if you have a big list and very complicated list and very long list that you have found much about the synonymous term. No, you have only found the tools with which to work afterwards. Then when one has found out comes the tonality building, we'll do that tomorrow, the tonality building, then comes the relationships which exist, and as the relationships are brought in, you begin to sense the structure of being, and once we have found the fundamental structure of being, we can restructure them. We just have to know a few rules and restructure, and so suddenly we have an infinitude of consciousness, never repeating itself, always new, always different, and yet always building on just a few fundamentals. That's science. Science means to be able to reduce the infinite to just a few, to simplicity, but to the right simplicity. And that's the main point. Yes. So, for tomorrow, I would like you to do, if you want to, some homework. And that homework would consist of the following thing. Namely, you could read most of what I have been saying, the essence about what I have been saying today in regard to synonym and synonymity. In our booklet on this booklet you have, you could read, for instance, Peggy's article. It's the first article from page 3 to 11. It's very easy to read, very understandable, and I think each one should have that knowledge that Peggy Brook presents in it. Also, I would like you, if you have time, to read page 16 to 27. 16 to 27. It doesn't start with the beginning of an article, in the middle of it. What goes before you can leave out for the moment. It starts in by a subtitle you will see on that page until the end, and it's all about the synonymity that Eva Maria von den Steinen has presented there, and it's a part which I felt was perhaps a bit difficult for the reader to understand on its first go, and that perhaps with what we have been discussing today, it should be easier. It's all right. It should be easier to understand. And I would really like that you could understand the whole question of synonymity so that we don't just think about seven synonymous terms, but about the meaning of the synonymity in language.